Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It is Friday, and it is September the 30th, 2016, the last day of September. The summer is gone, fall is here, and the world is going crazier on a daily basis. I'm glad you could join me so we could play that inevitable game of catch-up at the end of what are almost never boring or routine weeks. Although I could perhaps say, that insanity has become the new normal. Watching the debate between Clinton and Trump, watching the news accounts of it, listening to the nonsense being spewed by the mainstream media, chaos reigns supreme. And that's what this program is really here about. For far too long, the mainstream media has absolutely refused to provide the information that the American citizens absolutely must have to make sense of the madness. And I'm not going to profess to have answers on a wide variety of issues, but immigration is my turf. I was an INS agent for 30 years. I've rotated through all the squads within the investigations branch here in New York City. I was an immigration inspector for 4 years. I spent the year as an adjudications officer doing the marriage interviews. I've arrested drug dealers. I've arrested terrorists. I've arrested the proverbial dishwashers, and it's that has given me clarity where immigration is concerned. And rounding out that background is the fact that I've been before numerous congressional hearings in the House and Senate, and I've traveled across the country testifying before state legislative hearings as well. So I've heard pretty much, I will say almost everything where immigration is concerned. We've never heard it all. Trust me, there is this barrel that they do dip into periodically and pull something brand new out. But with time, it is more and more unusual for that to happen, at least from my perspective. Those of you familiar with my program know that I have a number of websites I want you to visit, so take out your crayon and write these down. My own personal website is Michael Cutler, one word, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. For years, I've been affiliated with Californians for Population Stabilization. CAPSWeb.org is their website. I've been doing lots and lots of articles of late for Front Page Magazine, sponsored by the terrific David Horowitz Freedom Center. Very proud and pleased to be one of many authors who contribute to their website. Front Page Mag is the way to go. I also write for The Social Contract. I expect to be writing once again for Progressives for Immigration Reform, and you can find my articles and quotes at Life, Zeth, and elsewhere. But the bottom line, my mission, and I have accepted it because it was self-imposed, was that in the wake of 9/11, in which my neighbors died, the ashes from that conflagration at Ground Zero landed on my home, that was a turning point for me. There was no putting the toothpaste back in the tube. Having witnessed this and having testified 4.5 years earlier about the inherent threat of terrorism based on failures of immigration, that's what started this whole business, the fact that our country was unable, actually more likely unwilling to keep terrorists out because the U.S. Chamber of Commerce have bought off most of the politicians. It's remarkable. Police officers, federal agents, civil servants, members of the armed forces, God help you if you take money from somebody that you're dealing with officially. Oh boy, they will set up a surveillance post on your street corner where you live. Can't take a cup of coffee, can't take a glass of soda, you can have a glass of water. I mean, these were the stringent requirements, and they made sense. They wanted to make certain that at no time a civil servant felt a sense of indebtedness to a person or an entity where they might be investigating them or where they might have to take an adverse action against them. Makes sense. But then the politicians go out there with barrels and buckets and suitcases and fill up with the money provided by the lobbyists, by special interest groups, both sides of the aisle. And in some cases, this is really remarkable. This is something to think about. Politicians getting money from people who also contribute to their competition in the election. Anybody does that, you know why they're doing it. They're not looking to make certain that a candidate wins. They want to make certain that they win. That's how messed up things are. You know, I was in Washington a couple of weeks ago. One of the things I'm also proud of doing, in addition to writing for those websites, I'm part of a speakers bureau, Allen L. Fried Associates. Been working with them for well over a decade. They do terrific seminars for the government. Mostly it's the military, law enforcement, the intelligence services. And I was down in Washington 2 weeks ago doing a presentation. I'll be back again in two more weeks, looking forward to my next trip to D.C. But I thought I'd have fun with the audience. And these were government executives. We had the leadership from a variety of federal agencies. And I said, you know, the next time you head out of the office, why don't you tell the folks around you, don't tell them you're going for lunch. Don't tell them you're going home. Tell them you're going out fundraising. See how that goes over. As you put your hat and coat on and you're heading for the door, say, see you tomorrow, folks. I'm going out fundraising. How crazy is this? How crazy is this? We need a new position in the cabinet of the President of the United States. And I don't care which president occupies the Oval Office. And we need to call that person the official auctioneer. Because aided and abetted by Congress, this country is selling off everything. Today, the internet is about to be turned over to an international group. I mean, the stuff we are doing to destroy America's sovereignty, to destroy opportunities for American citizens in their own country. And in Europe, you see what's happened. Great Britain said, see ya. They walked away from the European Union, the EU. And my God, the newscasts and the economists, and you'll see all these babbling fools on TV tomorrow. Oh my God, if they leave the EU, the world will collapse. Gravity will stop working. The sun will go dark. The sun won't rise in the east tomorrow. Great Britain left. The world goes on. Life continues. But you see, the globalists have an agenda. The globalists have an agenda, not unlike burglars who hate to see burglar alarms and gates and fencing. These folks, the globalists, the U.S. Chamber of Horrors, as I call them, the travel, hotel, hospitality industry executives, General Motors, all these companies have brought in H-1B visa holders and fired Americans. They don't want border security any more than a burglar doesn't want to see a house with burglar alarms and floodlights, gates, and strong locks. They want the doors and windows open. And if you want to talk about an inside job, it's our own politicians that have opened up, turned off the burglar alarms so they can be paid off by the globalists. Democrat, Republican, it doesn't matter. They're all the same. Repugnant cans and Democrats, they're all the same. There are a couple of notable exceptions, and my hat is off to them. I think of Senator Jeff Sessions. I think of some other folks in Washington. They do an amazing job. But they are swimming upstream because the globalists are running our government. They don't care how Americans are doing. They don't care what is happening. And if there's a terrorist attack, they'll blame it on somebody. But they don't seem to understand that they are literally playing with fire. They are playing with the potential for the destruction of the United States. And I just wrote a couple of articles for Front Page Magazine and Caps Web about how James Comey, the director of the FBI, has renewed his warning that as we apply pressure to ISIS in the Middle East, they're going to be sending their terrorists around the world, what he referred to as the diaspora of terrorists. That term disturbs me a bit because we always think about the diaspora of the Jews after the Holocaust. They scattered out of the concentration camps, went to Israel, came to America, came to countries that would have them. But what's happening now with the pressure on ISIS, they're sending their spores. They're sending their operatives, the terrorists, through refugee flows, through any means possible, so they can wreak havoc in the United States. For years, we've been hearing the same baloney. We're fighting the terrorists over there so that we don't have to fight them over here. Meanwhile, Fort Hood happened. Meanwhile, San Bernardino happened. Meanwhile, Boston happened. Meanwhile, Faisal Shahzad set off that bomb in Times Square. Thankfully, nobody died, but it hasn't stopped the terrorists. Yes, we make it more difficult for them, so they'll just have to find different places to meet and train. And the internet is getting ever more accommodating to them. The ability to encrypt even text messages certainly doesn't help us. It's a problem. It's a very big problem. And, you know, I just wrote an article, and I want to talk a little bit about it, and then I want to get to a couple of thoughts that I have about the presidential debate. But I just wrote an article for Front Page Magazine, debunking the biggest immigration lies, exposing the dangers of the Mexican border deception. And you're probably sitting there thinking, Mike Cutler's lost his mind. Mexican border deception? There's no deception there. Well, let me explain, and please go to Front Page Magazine and read my article. But those of you not familiar with the Second World War and the brilliance of the greatest generation, the brilliance of General Dwight Eisenhower and the Allies, as they were putting together the plans for D-Day, codenamed Operation Overlord, they realized, the Allies, Eisenhower and the others, Montgomery, all realized that if the Germans were to mass their defense forces in Normandy, our people would have just died. They would have hit the beach and nobody would have survived. At least there wouldn't have been a big enough invasion force to turn the tide and to begin the liberation of France. So they had to come up with a subterfuge. They had to come up with a plan to confound German intelligence and convince them that we were actually, we the Allies, were going to attack through Pas-de-Calais in France. Now, how do they do it? Well, they did many things, but the two biggest things they did, which was brilliant, they took the body of a dead soldier, dressed him in a suit, handcuffed a briefcase to his wrist, and they put in the briefcase bogus, phony, top-secret documents that in exquisite detail laid out the plans for the invasion of Calais. They then took the soldier with that briefcase, sealed up the briefcase, attached it to his wrist with a handcuff, put him in a torpedo tube of a submarine off the coast of Germany, and fired the tube. The soldier came out, washed up on the beach, and as was hoped for, he was found, more importantly, the documents, the bogus invasion plans for Calais were found by the Germans. So the Germans immediately started to check out, is this really going to happen? And what they did, and General George S. Patton, who I thought was dynamite, a maverick, and I sure relate to that, he was getting under everyone's skin, and so they gave him a job. His job was to be in charge of a phantom division. It was mainly basically parade floats, balloons made to look like tanks and trucks. And in the dead of night, because they didn't have the spy satellites we have today, they didn't have night visibility. In the dead of night, they had soldiers go out into the sand in Calais, or rather leading up to Calais, and they put tank tracks and truck tire tracks in the sand to make it look as though these vehicles had been driven into that area. And, of course, they couldn't drive them because these were inflatables made to look like tanks and trucks. So from the air, when the reconnaissance planes of the Luftwaffe flew over, what did they see? Huge numbers of tanks and trucks and artillery and all these tracks in the sand. And they said, my God, they are massing their forces. They're going to attack us at Pas-de-Calais. And so the Germans had to take part of their defense forces and send them to Calais. Then when our men went and attacked at Normandy, half of those positions on the Normandy coast were not manned because those soldiers had been sent over to Calais. Brilliant plan. Today we're being told all we have to do is secure the Mexican border. There's one major distinction before somebody blows a gasket. The Mexican border is a very serious problem. It's a huge problem. Tremendous problem. It's got to be secured. But the point is, as I wrote in my article, even if they could have gotten the mythical deflector shield off the Starship Enterprise and put it along the U.S.-Mexican border years before 9/11, 9/11 would have happened exactly the way it happened. The Boston Marathon attack would have happened exactly the way it did. All these other things would have happened because none of those terrorists ran the Mexican border. That's not to say that the border isn't a problem. It's also not to say that we might not be having terrorists coming across that border. I believe we are. There are terror training camps in the tri-border region of Brazil. And remarkably, the current occupant of the Oval Office has released the people we've been holding at Guantanamo, terrorists, and turned them loose in Latin America, and they disappear. I'd love to have a lottery as to how many went to Brazil, how many maybe went to Caracas, Venezuela, because on a routine basis, there are flights directly from Tehran, Iran, into Caracas, Venezuela, and those flights don't contain partygoers. They contain Iranian shock troops, the Quds. These are the saboteurs and assassins. So Latin America has become a hotbed for terrorism. So certainly that border absolutely has to be secured, period. No excuses, no story. But even if it was airtight, unless we go after the visa waiver program, and we won't, too many congressmen have been bribed. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce started a program called the Discover America Partnership, blithely ignoring that Al-Qaeda, ISIS, and others have discovered America because they've partnered with the hotel, hospitality, and travel industries so that there's a constant pressure on increase the number of visa waiver programs. Take away that important layer of security because, after all, the goal is not to protect America. The goal is to fill every seat on every airplane, every berth on every cruise liner, every seat in every ballpark across America. That's the goal. Fill every bed in every hotel room of every hotel across America. That's the goal. Get that money to pour into America so that these companies, hotel, hospitality, travel companies, can scoop up the bucks. And if Americans die, as the father of a boy who was killed on 9/11 said to me when I worked with him over at 9/11 Families for Secure America, he said, that to these bums is the cost of doing business. I call it collateral damage. They don't care. In fact, I would argue that the leaders of the Chamber of Commerce might even be in a perverse way happy when Americans die. You may think that's cold and nasty, but that's how I feel. They can call me up and tell me I'm wrong. They won't have the balls. Because I think they're trying to drum up business for the funeral home industry. It's an American business, and they'll take money from anybody. If they could run houses of prostitution, they would. Well, actually, they do. It's called Congress. Two houses of prostitution. If you think it makes sense, the lies that we're being told, then let's take on some of the lies, because I wrote about it, and there's more to come. You can't possibly cover all the lies. Those of you old enough to remember Johnny Carson and Ed McMahon, when Johnny would come up with a list and Ed McMahon would say, wow, it's amazing how on that one short list you've covered every possibility. Carson would say, wrong again, elephant breath or whatever. And he would give him a whole bunch of bogus. And it could be a list on anything. People eat, arguments, husbands give their wife, you name it. So it's the same thing here. The lies just keep on coming. They are unbelievable. But what's even more unbelievable is the American people have been falling for it. And this goes back to Goebbels and the Nazis, because Goebbels came up with this idea of the big lie. If you go out there publicly on a daily basis and lie and tell the same lies again and again and repeat the lie again and tell that lie at every opportunity and get other members of the government to tell that lie at every opportunity, people start to say, oh, it must be true. It must be true. We've heard it often enough, so it must be true. So let me give you the first lie. Well, we've already kind of blown that up. If we simply would secure that Mexican border, everything would be fine. Bull. I wrote an article for Front Page Magazine. I called it Border Security and the Immigration Colander. That lie is the equivalent of saying that if we plug one hole, sort of kind of a little bit, in the bottom of a colander that you use to drain pasta, colander will now hold water. It's now watertight, even though it has so many other holes. makes no sense. If you tried to sell it at an infomercial, people would laugh. They'd turn the channel. But how many people really believe that the solution to the immigration crisis in America is a fence on the border? How many people believe that foolishness? The border's got to be made secure, but the real solution is to look at all of the failed components of the immigration system and address them all and address them simultaneously. Plugging one hole in the bottom of a colander doesn't turn a colander into a bucket. But you'd never know it to listen to the people, because when I travel around the country to do speaking engagements, and by the way, if there's anybody out there who knows of any such engagements, you can reach me through my website, michaelcutler.net. I travel everywhere. Next month, or actually, well, it's still next month. October, I'm going to be in New Jersey. December, I'm going to be in Pennsylvania. February, I'm planning to be in Texas. And there'll be others in between. We're still working those out. So if you become aware of opportunities, let me know. But wherever I go, people say to me, well, shouldn't we at least build a border fence as a good start? It's not a good start to what, you know, what this policy of the big lie is. You see, what's needed is, number one, to have interior enforcement of the immigration laws. That's not going to happen. It's not an accident that we have 45,000 people at TSA patting us down and x-raying us and searching our baggage. And meanwhile, while we have 20,000 Border Patrol agents and 35,000 New York City police officers, you have fewer than 5,000 ICE agents for the whole country doing enforcement of the immigration laws from within the interior. Why so small a number? Think about it. One of the issues that needs to be, in addition to mandatory E-Verify, another lie, if we would only make E-Verify mandatory, then we no longer have a problem. People would stop hiring illegal aliens. Really? You don't think someone's going to figure out a way to game the system? Of course they will. E-Verify should be made mandatory, but it does not go far enough. You need agents to conduct the investigations, conduct the audits, interview the alien employees, and make certain that the company isn't doing things under the table. When they hire people under the table, nobody knows about the aliens working for them. They wouldn't be reporting people being paid off the books to E-Verify, would they? So why doesn't anybody talk about that? Do you know how many times as an immigration agent, when I raided a factory, they had a set of books for the employees that were legal? Usually it was the office staff, and the illegal aliens were working off the books. So there's no reason to use E-Verify for aliens working off the books. How did I know they were off the books? Because I went to the factory. I looked at all the time cards. I counted how many people were in the factory, and then I interviewed them. And surprise, surprise, we found out that lots of companies were hiring people off the books. So even if E-Verify was mandatory, do you think these companies would have been using E-Verify to verify the status of people that were working off the books? Nobody thinks of this. Why? How dopey are we? They're off the books. There's no record. So why don't they hire more agents? So that those investigations don't get conducted. This is like a guy who sells Ferraris and Maseratis being able to persuade the mayor of his town to not put any police out there with radar detectors because his customers like to go fast. That's why they buy Ferraris and Maseratis. So he makes a campaign contribution to his mayor, and he said, hey, mayor, speed detectors, radar detectors, not so much. Speed cameras, absolutely not. Why? Because now he can sell more Ferraris, because more people know that when they're tooling around on the highways of that local community, they don't have to worry about getting a ticket. That's what they're doing with immigration enforcement. That's what they're doing with immigration enforcement. Create the charade. Tell this fairy tale story. All we need is E-Verify. All we need to do is secure the Mexican border. And who's going to find the people working off the books? Nobody. That's the secret. That's the secret. Now, there's another lie. and you hear it from both parties, and this is a doozy, we can't deport all of the illegal aliens, so we may as well give them lawful status since they can't be deported. Is that insane? Is that crazy? You can't deport them all. So the solution, according to Hillary Clinton, is citizenship. And the Republicans say, well, wait a minute. We don't want them to be citizens. Let's only, quotation marks, only let them work legally. Now, what does that do? It enables employers to hire foreign workers, because now the people that are legalized can work legally, but they will work for less money. And so, again, Americans and lawful immigrants are facing increased competition. So even if they don't lose their jobs, labor is a commodity. The more competition for jobs that there is, the lower the wage scale is. And so you suppress wages. And so last week, I was amazed. CBS Radio in New York, they were scratching their heads and the dandruff was flying. And they said, wow, the economy isn't doing well. And it's been determined that the average American family has much less disposable income. Of course they do. Wages have stayed stagnant and may have even gone down, but prices haven't stayed stagnant. So what happens? People are making less money now than they did two decades ago. What can you buy with that money? What can you buy with that money? So For the very wealthy, it's good news, bad news. The good news is they're saving a ton of money on the wages of Americans and on fringe benefits and perks because, you know, Americans, they want to live decently. How dare they? There's always room for more oarsmen on a slave ship. Ask Hillary Clinton. Ask the advocates for open borders and cheap labor and H-1B visas. So they're saving a ton of money on labor. That's the good news. The bad news, wages aren't going up. There's less disposable income to spend, so no one's buying the crap that they're turning out in their factories. Oops. So you would think that they would say the solution is to hire Americans, pay them a little more so they could buy the products and will pay for the services. That's not going to happen because these people are so blind greedy that they're just going to push wages down further to lower the cost to increase their profit margin until they completely kill the goose that laid the golden egg. We are in a vicious downward spiral and it is picking up speed, and there isn't anybody out there, with a couple of exceptions, I can't say there isn't anyone, there's a few, but not enough to stop this runaway train. Instead of saying, we're a country, we have to take care of each other. During the Second World War, corporations, American companies worked for free to supply airplanes and munitions to help America win the war. There isn't a company in the United States that would give you ice in the winter for free. Different world, different people. The greatest generation was replaced by what I fear could be the last generation. I have never in my life seen a level of greed, as we're seeing now, or a level of stupidity or complacency on the part of the American people. As long as the average American fool can get his or her new iPhone or new Xbox or whatever, all's right with the world. All's right with the world. Let someone else worry about it. That's how bad it's gotten. This, folks, makes no sense. So we come to that question. What do we do with the aliens that you can't arrest because we can't deport them all? And everyone says, oh, that's right. We can't deport them all. So here's the point. Law enforcement never arrests or summonses or fines more than generally a fraction of 1% of law violators. Everybody speeds. I admit I speed. It might be 5 miles over the limit, but the law is the law. If you're going 55 in a 50, you're speeding. If you're going 60 in a 50, you're speeding, right? How many times have you gone really fast and seen people pass you and nobody got pulled over? And what did the cops do with the ones they didn't pull over? It's kind of like a dumb joke. nothing. They didn't find them, right? So what? Does that mean they shouldn't enforce the speed laws in the United States because they can't get them all? Deporting illegal aliens is what immigration is supposed to do. If you're here illegally and we find you, we will arrest you, we will deport you. That's what you do with them. And the ones that don't get caught today will get caught tomorrow or the day after, or maybe not. Just like the tax cheats, just like the guy that mugs somebody, just like the guy who speeds, just like the drunk driver, just like the driver who texts while driving. What happens to them? They live to fight another day. And maybe tomorrow they get caught. But I guarantee you that deterrence through enforcement works. Which brings me to a topic that's a little bit off the immigration issue. A reporter from LifeZet called me up a day or two ago. They just published the article yesterday, so I guess they called me up Thursday, Wednesday, and said to me, would you like to have a conversation about stop and frisk? I said, sure. And he said to me, you work closely with the New York City Police Department. I said, absolutely. In fact, when I was assigned to the Unified Intelligence Division of the DEA in New York City, one of my bosses was a New York City police sergeant, and another one was a police lieutenant. And for many years, I had desks at various police precincts around New York, mostly the tougher ethnic immigrant communities. And it wasn't just about Mexicans, by the way. It was about Panamanians and Jamaicans. I've arrested my fair share of Europeans. I arrested a suspected IRA terrorist. I don't think anyone would confuse him for being Mexican. That's the other lie, and we'll get to that. But nevertheless, he said to me, do you think it makes sense to have police officers stop people and pat them down? I said, sure it does. There's got to be a reason for doing it, behavioral and so forth. But yes, it makes sense. And it's not the end of the world for the person who gets stopped and patted down. Look, I'll tell you what, I carried a gun as an agent and I still have a carry permit. And there were occasions when, as an agent, the police officer saw the bulge and said to me, want to talk to you. And they pulled me aside. In fact, one time I was getting into my government car, took my jacket off, got in the car, started driving. I got pulled over by a police officer because I had just gotten into my car in front of my house, took off my jacket. It was a summer day, hot as hell out there. And he pulled me over and on the loudspeaker said to me, step out of your car, keep both hands where I can see them. And I did. I approached the vehicle. And I said to him, I've got credentials in my pocket. I'm a federal agent. He said, let me see them. And that was it. Basically, it was a stop and frisk. He didn't frisk me, but he pulled me over because he saw that I had a gun. What harm was done? I showed him my badge, my credentials. He made a notation in his book that he had stopped me. He wished me a safe tour. I wished him a safe tour. Have a safe day. Thank you. We shook hands. I got back in my car. He got back in his car. I went on my way. He went on his way. If you're in a neighborhood where bullets are flying routinely, and I did a lot of work in those neighborhoods, you could hear gunfire every night. Sounded like downtown Saigon back then when I started as a new agent in 75. It was horrific. Bullets flying everywhere. And in fact, I was giving an Israeli police general a tour of some of our tougher neighborhoods, and he had a colleague join him. And I was thinking, my God, imagine if a round comes through the window and one of these two Israeli officials get wounded. Goodness. I was joking that maybe we should get under the dashboard and I'll try to drive around with a periscope. That's how bad it was back then. Stop and frisk cut down a lot of that. But even if you stop somebody and you frisk them and the guy has no weapon and the police officer says, have a nice day. Sorry to bother you. Whatever. We're just trying to keep your community safe. What's the problem? What's the problem? I'm more offended by a dead body lying in a hallway or an alleyway. I'm more offended by a child who playing in the schoolyard takes a bullet to the head and dies or winds up paralyzed than I am with the notion that a police officer might say to somebody, are you carrying a firearm? Step over here so I can pat you down. Big deal. And so this reporter said to me, well, you know, Mr. Cutler, the argument against stop and frisk is they haven't been effective. I said, how do you know it hasn't been effective? Now, here's yet another example of the big lie. Because many times when the police stop people in those tough neighborhoods and pat them down, they're not carrying a gun. I said, let me see if I understand this insanity that you're saying to me. Stop and frisk is not effective because many times people who are frisked aren't carrying weapons. He said, that's right. I said, what's the purpose of stop and frisk? He said, to discourage people from carrying weapons. I said, okay, can you please put those two sentences together? The police stop people who aren't carrying guns when they frisk them. And people are saying, this is proof that this is unnecessary. I would argue it's proof that it's working. It's because of the fear of being caught with a firearm that these people are probably not carrying weapons. You're turning a success into a failure for a narrative. I want everyone out there to stop and think about how stupid this is. The guy has no gun. Maybe he would have been carrying a gun. Now the police are being criticized because he wasn't carrying a weapon. The whole idea is to get people to stop carrying guns. But you see, no one stops to ask the question. No one says, wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense. You see? That's the problem that we're facing today, folks. The narrative is too readily accepted by a broad spectrum of Americans who can't think for themselves. We are told that we don't have enough computer programmers in the United States. We need to bring in more. Pick up any newspaper on almost any week, and what will you find? How many American programmers are being fired? If you have a shortage of computer programmers, you don't fire the programmers you have so you can replace them with people from India or elsewhere. You see? The shortage is created. It is a fantasy. It is the Calais deception. We're firing Americans, so we now have vacancies in our IT department. No, you have the vacancies because you fired the Americans. You see? And then we're told that our workers aren't all that good. Well, if you look at the records, American engineers and programmers are the ones who have the patents. The drones who come here from other countries, you know, you get what you pay for. They're not nearly as dedicated or talented as are the Americans. But that's okay, because all they want is cheap. They want bargain basement. And they don't mind screwing over their fellow Americans. They don't mind screwing over the U.S. economy. They don't mind weakening our defenses. They don't mind educating our adversaries. How do you think many of the computer hackers probably learned how our systems work so they could hack into them? By coming to America and getting jobs so they became familiar with our systems. This isn't rocket science. It isn't rocket science, but the American people are too willing to listen to the lies, shrug their shoulders and say, oh, well, I guess we got no choice. I guess we've got no choice. Earlier today, the Juno space probe that was orbiting a comet was sent spiraling into the comet in a death plunge, but it already served out its purpose. It took the images and so forth. And you look at the achievements we've made in space. Most of those achievements have been made by American scientists. Yes, the European Space Agency does really great work. They do. They partner with us. But when you look at the Juno space probe that is now orbiting Jupiter, an amazing achievement. Last year, New Horizons zipped by Pluto, skimming the top of that planet just above its atmosphere. Think about it. It takes sunlight to get to Earth 8 minutes. It takes the signal, which travels at the speed of light, to get from Earth to the space probe hours. Hours. 10 years to get there. It's the fastest object we've ever launched. And it arrived within seconds of when it was predicted, and they were able to steer it so it didn't collide with any of the moons of Pluto, and the camera was facing exactly where it needed to face, and they got some of the most unbelievable photographs back from deep space. These were Americans who did it. Americans who did it. It's Americans who built the Panama Canal, Americans who broke the sound barrier, Americans who launched the Earth, the first communication satellites. Think about it. And meanwhile, all we keep hearing about is how dopey we are, how incapable we are. Now adding to the aggravation of Disney firing 800 American computer programmers, McDonald's just fired 70 American accountants and replaced them with people, I guess, from India, H-1B visa holders. Why are we firing Americans? Is there any more disloyal an act that a company can do to a loyal employee than fire them and then replace them with a foreign worker and then generally require that the American that was fired has to train his or her replacement? And then you look at Hillary Clinton. I'm going to get every kid to go to college for free. Well, I happen to agree with municipal colleges being free. If I didn't have that benefit here in New York City, I don't know where my career would have taken me, but I wouldn't have been a federal agent. I couldn't have afforded to pay for college. So I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of providing free education to kids willing to study hard, work hard, and attain a grade average. That's fine. But when you get out of college and you don't have a job, even if you've studied science and technology, engineering, or math, then what was the point to the exercise? And Hillary Clinton, and I don't know why Donald Trump, but we're going to talk about that in a minute, didn't hammer Hillary. For all the investigations that they've been doing about the Clinton Foundation, about marketing watered down HIV drugs, which haven't helped anybody, but the Clinton Foundation made money off of it. Example of corruption after example of corruption after example of corruption. One of the biggies is that the Clinton Foundation partnered with the Gates Foundation, and Bill Gates has been the loudest proponent for expanding the visa, the 1B visa program. So you don't think that Hillary Clinton is ready, willing, and able, if elected, to serve up more American jobs to foreign workers at the behest of American companies and especially at the behest of Bill Gates? This is madness. Lie after lie. And we see it. And then we're told, well, if we get the aliens out of the shadows, we'll be safer. And people say, well, doesn't that make sense? No, it doesn't. Because there's nothing in any of these immigration legislation that they've proposed that would involve hiring thousands of more agents to look for the aliens who would not come out of the shadows. All you're going to get are the people who volunteer. Now, some of them may well be terrorists. If they're not known to our system, and that's the fallacy of the terror watch list. Most of the terrorists who attack us are not known to us prior to the attack. Yes, the Tsarnaev brothers were being looked at. There were a couple of others. But many times, they're not known to anybody. So if all you're doing is saying, we're going to deport aliens we know are terrorists, you're going to miss the ones who will carry out the attack. Immigration laws need to add randomness to the enforcement program. And we do it in all other areas of law enforcement except immigration. Where immigration is concerned, common sense and the rule book go out the window because the agenda is cheap labor, unlimited foreign tourists, and unlimited foreign students. So they say, well, we'll get them out of the shadows. No, you won't. The people who know that their fingerprints will set off the alarm bells are not, I repeat, are not coming out of the shadows. And no one's going to go into the shadows to look for them. They will still be there, and there's hundreds of thousands of them. Hundreds of thousands. That's another one of those lies. So now we come to the debate. And there were a couple of moments when I thought that maybe Holt would ask about immigration, because that was the issue that Trump put on the map. He didn't. But where was Trump? I'm sure you all, if you saw the debate, saw that moment when Hillary Clinton was asked by Trump where she was, why she wasn't out on the campaign trail, deriding her for prepping for the debate. And she had this very smug little look on her face and said, I was preparing for the debate and I am preparing to be president. Now, the obvious answer or the question that Trump should have hit her with may not be obvious to you. So let me share it with you and see what you think. Let's take this for a test drive. Could you imagine if Donald Trump had said to Hillary, in your preparation, did you review the 9/11 Commission report? Because the 9/11 Commission was abundantly clear, crystal clear on the fundamental fact that the terrorists who've attacked America, not just the 9/11 terrorists, were aliens who one way or the other managed to enter the United States, most often by committing visa fraud or some other form of fraud that involved entering through a port of entry. And this is critical, because here's something else that you may have lost sight of. Hillary Clinton was the Secretary of State. One of the key responsibilities for the State Department is to issue visas. So State Department knows full well that the categories of aliens who are supposed to be excluded from the United States starts out with aliens with dangerous communicable diseases. Let's remember Ellis Island was a quarantine station. Aliens who are severely mentally ill and are violent or sex offenders, again, Ellis Island. But the next category are criminals. The next category are spies and human rights violators, criminals and terrorists. And then we go down further and they talk about aliens who would likely become a public charge or aliens who, if they worked, would take the jobs of Americans. But as Secretary of State, she should have that bit of law burned into her head. It should be on her forehead. It should be engraved on the inside of her eyelids. Grounds for excluding aliens include terrorists and criminals. And Trump should have called her out on it. He should have said, as Secretary of State, you know the significance of our immigration laws, because those laws govern the issuance or denial of issuance of a visa to a foreign national. It's about keeping out criminals and terrorists. And yet you are willing to throw caution and American lives and national security to the wind once again by giving lawful status to millions of aliens who entered the United States without inspection and to God knows how many tens of thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands of refugees who cannot be vetted. To me, that would have been the home run. To me, that's the grand slam, walk-off home run at the end of the game. Who's nowhere to be found. See, we keep coming back to this fundamental point, folks. Immigration is not a single issue, but a singular issue that's impacting us in so many ways. What keeps me awake at night is the fact that Hillary Clinton would essentially take down our borders completely. Would make it easy for illegal aliens to get United States citizenship. And, you know, the wheel would have turned full circle. And this is what I mean. What you may not know. It was during the Clinton administration that a woman by the name of Doris Meisner was the immigration commissioner. Now, in 1993, when Clinton first took office, we had two terrorist attacks committed on American soil by men from the Middle East who gamed the immigration system. You had a guy by the name of Kansi, a Pakistani, who shot up the CIA January 93. He had applied for political asylum. 1 month later, we have the first attack at the World Trade Center, a bombing that left six dead, more than 1,000 people injured, and $500 million in damages inflicted on that complex of buildings in lower Manhattan. Immigration was the fundamental vulnerability. In 1997, I did my first hearing, May 20th, on visa fraud, immigration fraud, because of concerns that the visa process and the way we were giving out lawful status, whether it was political asylum or green cards or citizenship, was leaving lots to be desired. And then you look, we're in 1998, just 2 days shy of the fifth anniversary of that bombing at the Trade Center. This was on February 24th. Dianne Feinstein said we should be doing away with the visa waiver program, perhaps, question the wisdom of giving visas to aliens who come from countries that sponsor terrorism, question the wisdom of teaching STEM curriculum classes to people who come from those terrorist-sponsoring countries. She talked about specifically biochemistry, nuclear physics, and nuclear engineering. She said these people could turn that training into the ability to kill us. Dianne Feinstein, no one said a word. When Trump says it, everybody howls. Isn't that remarkable? But with that for the whole backdrop, around 1995, Doris Meisner started a program known as Citizenship USA, CUSA, in which more than 1.2 million applications for citizenship were run through the system so quickly that Doris Meisner was upset that the interviews were too time-consuming. That the fingerprints, who cares? So, as it turned out, if I have the numbers right, it was certainly thousands. I believe it was tens of thousands of criminal aliens who ultimately showed to have, were determined to have criminal histories, were given United States citizenship, and Meisner had said, let's forget about doing the interviews. Meanwhile, the law says you're supposed to do good moral character investigations. So we swing back again, and what do we find? A couple of weeks ago, to everybody's horror, it was discovered that we had 800-odd aliens, and they think the numbers are actually going to be much higher by the time we're done digging around, or they're done digging around. More than 800 aliens from countries that sponsored terrorism were granted U.S. citizenship. Now, here's the really bizarre and unbelievable part of this. They weren't not only eligible for citizenship, they were under orders of deportation, under orders of removal. They were supposed to be sent out of the country. And Hillary Clinton is running around saying, when I'm president, we're going to give everybody who's here illegally a path to citizenship. A path to citizenship. So we're going to be naturalizing terrorists. We're going to be naturalizing fugitives. We're going to be naturalizing criminals. Think about that. And think about the fact that we've seen this before. How many years were the Nazi hunters out there looking for war criminals who were lawfully admitted into the United States and they went on to become U.S. citizens? Now, they did not generally commit violence in the United States. So the threat to American lives was minimal. However, the crimes they committed were unspeakable. So we've seen this all before. And here's Hillary Clinton talking about giving lawful status to millions of people who entered the United States stealthily, covertly, snuck in the dead of night. For all the complaints we're hearing about how Syrian refugees cannot be vetted, and they can't, and we should be hearing more complaints about it, by the way. What in the world? What in the world is the vetting process for an alien who sneaks into the United States at 3 o'clock in the morning across a desolate part of the U.S.-Mexican border or the Canadian border or by stowing away on a ship? There's no record of their entry, no way of knowing who they are or when they got here or who they're affiliated with or why they came. Not a word. You see, I wish that Donald Trump had said to Hillary, this makes no sense. This makes no sense. You don't want to divide families. How did the family get divided in the first place? When a man or a woman from Mexico or another third world country, desperate for a decent way of life, came to America. But you see, all we're doing is backing up the oligarchy of Mexico. Because if you look at Mexico, there's a guy by the name of Carlos Slim, who was at one point the wealthiest man in the world. He was born in Mexico, went to college in Mexico, and made his billions in Mexico, and he's still super, super, super wealthy. I think he's still on the top 10 list. How was some guy in Mexico able to make that kind of money, and yet at least 10% of all Mexicans live in the United States? And the answer is easy. Mexico is not a republic, it's an oligarchy. And a couple of years ago, an economist, I believe from Princeton, said that America had become an oligarchy also. Very few people control most of the wealth of the United States today. And guess what? They need more. This isn't like the guy living in poverty who steals a loaf of bread and a quart of milk because he's starving, or he's got a baby at home who's starving and doesn't know what to do. These are people who have mansions sprinkled all over the world, and they fly to their mansions in their own private jet planes, and they don't fly Learjets. They fly 747s or 757s or maybe A380s, the biggest of them all. They have limitless wealth, and they need more. They are they're in a feeding frenzy, not unlike cancer. And what we're doing is we have seen in America that Mexico is becoming the role model for America instead of the other way around. I wish that Donald Trump had made those points. I hope that when Mike Pence debates the Democrat candidacy, the candidate for the vice presidency, that he raises the issues. Or I hope that Donald Trump will find a way to weave these points into the next debate. These are cold, hard facts. This is the reality we face. America's borders are our first and last line of defense. You have Comey saying that there's a wave of terrorists that will be headed our way. Prepare for it. It's like when they tell you, you hear the alarms, the horns blaring, the sirens blaring in Tornado Alley, warning people to head for their storm cellars. Well, the sirens are blaring, and Hillary Clinton is saying, the hell with the sirens, I have a political agenda. This is insanity. This is insanity. And it's something that we, the people, need to be cognizant of. And this is why, by the way, although the presidential race is obviously getting the lion's share of the attention, every House seat is up for grabs. One-third of the Senate seats are up for grabs. Folks, stay involved in these races. Make certain to educate yourself about your candidates for those seats in the Congress and for the mayors and governorships across the country. Sanctuary cities must end. They undermine public safety. They undermine national security. They undermine the salaries, the livelihoods of American workers. The craziness has to stop. One of the other big myths, that it's anti-immigrant to want the laws enforced, it's actually pro-enforcement. And pro-enforcement is pro-immigrant, because every year this country admits more lawful immigrants than the rest of the world combined. As I said at the outset of my program today, we live in a crazy era, a very difficult and a very dangerous era. We need to get involved. If you're a parent, you know that being a good parent means looking out for your children's future. This is about your children's future. Those of the Jewish faith are about to celebrate the Jewish New Year coming up. I'm one of those. So for those of you who do celebrate the new year, I wish you all a very happy, healthy, safe, successful new year. But no matter how you measure your year, I hope good one, a safe one, a healthy one, successful one for you and your families, and a peaceful one, most importantly, as well. I thank you, as always, for joining me for this hour of catching up, as I like to think of it, at the end of the week. If you find this program of value, please let your friends and neighbors know about it. You know, I call this my bucket brigade of truth. The mainstream media has everybody bamboozled. And the best antidote is the facts, the truth. And that's what I'm trying to provide with this program and with the articles that I write for capsweb.org, for Front Page Magazine, for The Social Contract, for Progressives for Immigration Reform. And that's why I'm taking my, or have been taking my show on the road. So again, if you're familiar with an opportunity, please reach me through michaelcutler.net and check out my website anyway. It's an easy place to find the articles that I've been writing. And again, please share it with your friends and neighbors, because as I like to always remind folks, democracy most certainly is not a spectator sport. Have a great weekend, everybody. Stay safe, and I look forward to seeing you again next week, same time, right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. Good night, everybody.